It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
Good afternoon. Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. The rain has tried to wash us out this week here in Atlanta, but our hardworking team here delivers. Rain or shine, no matter. Big welcome to our listeners. Glad to have you with us here on the show today. So let's time travel a little bit here. If you're catching this podcast, maybe you're cooking the turkey or it's the day before Thanksgiving and you're catching on replay, and you want to listen live next time, that's easy. Go to supplychainnowradio.com. We've got a big red button at the top. Click on that, follow the instructions, and we'll get you on board live here at Supply Chain Now Radio. So this morning, we're going to be focusing once again on the Supply Chain City, the hashtag Supply Chain City of Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to be speaking with two organizational leaders based right here in Atlanta and a third with significant roots here, all three doing big things in industry. So first, let's say good morning to my talented good afternoon to my talented co-host, Will Haraway, founder and lead evangelist with Backbeat Marketing. Good morning, Preacher Will.
Hello there, Scott.
Glad that you're back. Looking forward to hearing from you again in just a minute on Top Things to Know in Supply Chain Now.
Yes, sir.
Geared up for Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like to get my smoked turkey out.
Yeah? So did you
Green bean casserole.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Right out of this Campbell soup recipe.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Good shout out. Potential sponsor for the show, right? All right. So let's also welcome today's featured guest. First off, John Slangerup, chairman and CEO at American Global Logistics. Good afternoon, John.
Great to be here, Scott. Thanks for the invite.
Glad you're back again. Two-time featured guest here.
Friend of the show.
That's right. Big friend of the show. Bill Huber, chief financial officer at VLUX Group USA. Good afternoon, Bill.
Hi, Scott. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm glad you're here. World traveler here. We were able to get his private plane in here just for a couple hours.
In my dreams.
Right. Good friend, a longtime friend. Glad to have Bill here. We got Will and Bill, and we are broadcasting live in the afternoon for the first time out of 30 episodes. So if I keep saying good morning, that's why. Yvonne Jerez, national president of Hacimos. Good afternoon, Yvonne.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here. You know, you made me hungry just thinking about turkey, actually fried turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. I think after tasting that, there's no other way to do a turkey.
It is pretty great. It is pretty great.
But you got to be certified to cook it. That's what my dad tells me. Is that true? Maybe not true.
I don't know about that. I mean, I've seen plenty of things on YouTube where people blow those things up. So there's no certification involved.
It's certainly a show. It's a dangerous proposition. But I tell you, Arby's has a heck of a turkey, fried turkey sandwich.
I like how you think. Arby's right around
just
the corner.
Just around the corner,
yeah,
man.
We need to get them on.
I tell you. Name dropping. I love it.
Good sandwiches. So we're going to lead off the show today. Like we always do, you know, we're going to share some of the top things to know in supply chain now. You know, we are right in the middle of a very hot industry. Supply chain makes it happen. But we're going to cherry pick a couple things that our listeners should know about if they are in or if they care about supply chain. And Will, one of the things that makes Atlanta such an outstanding logistics hub is all the infrastructure, easy access, planes, trains, automobiles. Great movie, huh? Well, we're hearing that our traffic is about to get even smarter. So tell us more.
Yeah, you know, what a week to talk about traffic when we've had 80 straight hours of rain and the roads are clogged. But I'll take Ben's role. You know, our co-host Ben normally focuses on Atlanta supply chain. But today I will tell you that the Georgia Department of Transportation announced plans earlier this year to build a smart commercial vehicle-only corridor along I-75, right? It's like, we've been waiting for that a while. But so this is a $2 billion project. It's scheduled to begin, you know, not around the corner necessarily, but in 2026, and could take 10 years to build. And what that's going to mean is fiber optic cables, sensors that inform drivers of traffic conditions and congestions. You know, it would support, in theory, autonomous technology, truck platooning, you know, which tethers two trucks together so they travel very closely to get very close to each other, reducing drag. So that's exciting news, and it's years away, but a little closer to home, especially to my home. I live in Druid Hills. Atlanta is already testing a smart corridor on North Avenue, the home of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. So, and in a collaboration between Georgia Tech and the city of Atlanta, the avenue connects, as we know, Coca-Cola, AT&T. It's a lot of technology down there anyway.
Important stretch there.
Exactly. So, already right now, there are Internet of Things sensors, high definition cameras connected to an app with video analytics. And they're going, it's that same thing. The goals are reducing congestion, moving vehicles more efficiently, and improving safety. And this is the pilot with it rolling out in the future and certainly informing that project that's going to launch on I-75.
Mm. And you mentioned our friend Ben Harris. He's typically our third co-host on the Supply Chain City theme show here. Ben Harris, Supply Chain Ecosystem, Director of Supply Chain Ecosystem with the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and should give him a big high five. I think he's on the road this week. And Chris Barnes, Apex Atlanta Executive Director and President, was in the warm-up conversation. So glad that Chris could stop by this morning. So let's move from smarter traffic to cleaner trucks. So what's going on with emissions policies?
For sure. And segue away from that, that 75 corridor, Atlanta Regional Commission expects 56% growth in freight volume by 2040. So, I mean, it couldn't come any faster. Mm. But the trucking guys continue to have more and more things announced that make it a little bit tougher for them. Although we can agree that this is a good thing. The EPA launched on Tuesday the Cleaner Trucks Initiative, and they're looking to reduce oxide emissions from heavy trucks by 2020, and according to a press release that was put out on Tuesday. What's unique about this really is that the Trump administration hasn't exactly been known for tightening emission standards, especially when it comes to the truckers. They've sort of been fighting the ELD mandate a little bit.
It's been a tough one.
Yeah.
Big curveball.
So it's another thing for some of these truckers to react to and to maybe change the way that they're doing business, but it's ultimately a good thing. But interesting to see this coming on the heels of all of the ELD regulation as well.
Yeah, navigating change, the emissions permissions from politicians. Is that right, Will?
That's a turn, man. You say it three times fast.
Absolutely. So smart traffic, cleaner emissions, cleaner trucks, and then one more thing that on the front end of the show. Want to add, so we talk about Amazon quite a bit on Supply Chain Now Radio since the inception. And unless you've been living in a cave somewhere on a small island in the Pacific Ocean recently, which is sometimes sounds kind of appealing, right? You've probably heard that old Jeff B and his team have made their HQ2 decision. And they didn't choose Atlanta, right? And let's be honest, that stinks. But, as we've said for months here on the show, if Amazon and HQ2 didn't come to the Supply Chain City, hey, that's okay, because a ton of other companies have been seeing the light, drinking the Kool-Aid, recognizing the powerful mix of resources that we have here to fuel success, innovation, and growth, and they've been making the investment. So on that note, and we've announced this before, but we're going to act like this is a big formal announcement, we're proud that to announce Apex Atlanta has partnered with CSCMP Atlanta Roundtable and the Metro Atlanta Chamber to host the 2019 Atlanta Supply Chain Awards. So big part of the aim there is we want to spotlight the success and the excellence across the end-to-end supply chain here in the Supply Chain City. Bill, as you and I were getting in the elevator earlier, we were talking about how supply chain is not what it was thought of in the 80s. It's true end-to-end. It touches on every functional aspect of the organization.
Exactly.
And you got to have it.
All disciplines.
That's right. And we want to, there's so many great stories here, great companies, great leaders, great businesses and teams that have a presence here. We want to spotlight as much as we can. So we're going to be recognizing success in categories such as Sustainability Excellence Award, the Manufacturing Excellence Award, Supply Chain Innovation of the Year, which is going to be a neat one.
Yeah.
Supply Chain Pioneer Award. We're going to institute a Supply Chain Hall of Fame of sorts. So more to come. Sponsorships open. A big portion of the proceeds are going to go to support APIX and CSCMP scholarship programs. Early sponsors include the world's number one ranked airport, Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International, the Georgia Centers of Innovation for Logistics, the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, National Minority Truckers Association, to name a few. The nominations, all nominations will go to Will, and Will is going to be deeming the winners. Is that how we
sure.
the process would work?
The power. I'm right. drunk on the power.
That's right. Heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? So nominations, kidding aside, nominations open very soon, literally within days. We have a website we're being launching that we're going to be directing most of the nominations and the information flow through. And we're going to be standing up a very credible panel of judges that will be reviewing all the nominations as they come in across all 11 award categories, and we'll be announcing those winners in the new year. So for more information, send us a note to info@apexatlanta.org, and we're going to get you hooked up upward and onward. Too much good news to celebrate here in Atlanta, and 2019 is looking bright. So let's turn a negative into a positive, right?
Yeah. No, that's exciting. Yeah, can't wait for that.
Yeah, so one last thing here. On our way in to beautiful Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, mm-hmm. Where we are now, there's a new city yeah. popping up every day here. We reached out to John Haber, supply chain expert, renowned supply chain expert and friend of the show, at SME, and we asked his quick opinion. And one of those quotes I picked from John is, so UPS is very well entrenched in the Atlanta community, and combining that with the recent opening of their new operations hub south of the city, Amazon really could have been fighting an uphill battle to establish even a portion of the HQ2 here. And he wanted to mention some of the other things, kind of the noise around the decision. We all have been reading the news and seeing some of the headlines, some of the things that mm-hmm. were encouraged and some things that weren't so encouraged. But nevertheless, he's got a great blog that is listing a wide variety of his insight from the decision. You can check that out at spinmanagementexperts.com. All right. Will, any final items as we move into our first guest?
Well, I know we talked about this a little bit last week with Amazon making that decision. And while it is disappointing, the spotlight that they put on the Gulch area down there by the dome is, I think, what helped get it a spotlight that it became developed, and which is a great thing. It's needed to be done for the entire time I've lived here, for sure. So turning a negative to a positive, that's definitely one of the things. That's going to be amazing.
Good point. You know? Great point. Big win. All right. So with that said, our first guest today on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome John Slangerup, Chairman and CEO at American Global Logistics and former CEO of one of the world's premier seaports, the Port of Long Beach. Also a two-time guest now here at Supply Chain Now Radio. So, John, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon. Great to be here again.
Well, great to have you back on the show. We enjoyed your first visit in February. It's hard to believe. It seems like we blinked, and all of a sudden it's end of the year. Turkey time. That episode's been downloaded almost 65,000 times, so your ears may have been burning quite a bit. But I know that you've also enjoyed a lot of growth at AGL as well. Big, successful year for the firm.
It's been coming along very nicely. A very challenging year for everybody in the business. The never rests. I mean, there's always some new thing coming out of left field. If it's not too much capacity, it's too little capacity. if it's not too little capacity, then there's suddenly lots of tariffs entering the marketplace.
Ooh, and what's one of Will's favorite topics?
Oh my goodness, driving our poor customers crazy.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, so there's lots of dynamics in this industry, but it's been a lot of fun.
So talking about a lot of the new things that are popping up, we want to talk to you about emerging technologies in supply chain and logistics. And we'll touch on a report here in a second. It's pretty big news. But give us some of your recent observations first.
Well, it's really exciting times. I mean, the reality is that over the last 10 years, the first part of that decade was very much focused on physical assets, building up infrastructure, which is desperately needed in this country and certainly among all of the gateways and ports across America. So tens of billions of dollars have been invested across the country very, very appropriately in infrastructure. But the last 4 or 5 years we've seen a disproportionate share of that spend occurring around technology. And that's the exciting part that I think, because for the first time, if we really are going to optimize supply chains in this country, it's going to be driven by the application of technology. And so the advanced technologies that are coming out, everything from, the traditional things like analytics and even predictive analytics, right. and some of it even machine learning opportunities and productivity gains across various types of operations and and then we give away to really AI and truck models, autonomous vehicles, mm-hmm. all of that stuff's behind that. Mm-hmm. So it's a wave coming of incredible opportunity to truly automate and optimize supply chains. So I'm excited. I view it somewhat as sort of a renaissance.
Yes.
Because if you think about the industry, if you think back 40 years, you know, the early days of the UPS and FedEx's, you know, developing really this overnight capability and changing consumer behavior, what really allowed that to happen in those days was technology. And much of that technology introduced the notion that information associated with, you know, deliveries of goods was almost as important as the goods themselves.
Right.
And it has changed consumer behavior. And now you've got the Amazon effect, which now, you know, you want everything anytime, all the time.
Free.
And as cheap as possible, almost free. It's dramatically changed our world yet again. So you've got these not so much disruptive technologies as much as disruptive models that are applying technology in new ways to make things much more precise, much more cost-effective, and much more real in terms of get it to me right now.
Yep.
So the new consumer is that's what it's all about. So this renaissance that we're seeing right now is long overdue. It is happening. It's happening at a very rapid pace, and we're excited to be part of it.
So I want to circle back on that renaissance. That's a big operative term there. Real quick, though, you know what you're speaking to in terms of this the ever increasing usage, utilization, and optimization of technology and supply chain. It's really augmenting and supplementing the human factor. You know, we had Chris Barber with Gray Orange here last week, right? Two weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Gray Orange is a big leader in the usage of bots in supply chain and out in industry. And he made a really big point, and I've heard a lot of technology leaders really, really stress it because there's a the wrong
kind of connotation, right?
Yeah, wrong connotation out there that all of a sudden machines and technology and bots and AI, all that stuff is replacing the human element in supply chain, and we would argue that it is assisting, it's supplementing,
augmenting it.
It's augmenting.
Yeah. Well, there's no question about that. Yeah. I mean, you know, even in our business, we're very focused on customer service, the customer experience, and every one of our employees, that is what they live for. They live for serving that customer, solving problems, you know, interacting with the customer, and so forth. The trouble is they get bogged down in the paperwork associated with serving a customer. So we've largely eliminated the paperwork side of things. Everything is automated. Our end-to-end visibility, for example, the ability to give to our customers full visibility into their supply chains used to be a very, very time-consuming process. Our operators, our customer specialists would in fact spend probably 3/4 of their day just collecting information, much of it manually. Mm-hmm. Today, all of that's automated. It's now being pushed to them. They're able to quickly make decisions about what's going wrong in the supply chain and then respond to that in a very, very advanced. Now, the next step is applying analytics to that, and particularly predictive analytics. So as you start to see things emerging, that information will be pushed and you'll be able to make decisions about rerouting or whatever,
proactive
activity. And so our folks are turned on by technology because it's giving them more time to do the things they love to do.
Yep. And upward mobility for sure. So going back to renaissance, so this renaissance that the industry, not just the industry, because if it's impacting supply chain, it's impacting everything. So today, this morning, AGL released an intriguing report, Supply Chain Technology Investment Outlook. So let's talk about that. How is that outlining part of this renaissance?
Well, we partnered with a great friend of ours, Kathy Robertson, and she's part of the Logistics Trends and Insights group. Fantastic, really thought leaders in this space.
Sure.
And we worked on a agnostic study to really understand what's going on with technology. It's in the report released today. Very, very important read, I think. The bottom line is that within the space over the next 4 years, maybe, We anticipate more than $80 billion being spent on all forms of infrastructure development. Technology alone in the next 4 years will be somewhere in the $3 to $4 billion range of just applied technology. So that hasn't happened at that pace before. That's why you see so much excitement out there. You see so many new entrants into the marketplace. The addressable market for these new startups is significant. Tremendous venture investment going into this marketplace now. We never saw venture capital in logistics before. Never saw it. It's always been a private equity world. Now we're seeing a tremendous amount of cash coming into the marketplace through venture capital, and that's good for us.
So I hate to ask a naive question, but why are, beyond some of the obvious reasons, why is that? Why do you think?
Well, because, you know, the bottom line is the tech side came out of Silicon Valley. The Silicon Valley is really a venture world, right? And so they're seeing an opportunity to take a kind of a staid, old, you know, industry, not particularly known for innovation, not particularly known for, you know, technology per se.
Slow moving.
Willingness to change.
You know, it's just been kind of, you know, doing its thing. And very few people are very tuned in to supply chain in the first place. Unless you're in business and that's your particular job, you're really not tuned into it. But now suddenly there's all this excitement about technology driving this renaissance. And that's why venture capital is involved.
Any data points around in the investment outlook around supply chain podcasting and how large?
Selfishly asked.
Yes. So talking about some of those startups, you know, Will and I, we were talking on the warm up conversation, you know, Flexport and Convoy and Freightos. No shortage of players that have made big gains in the last 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, for sure. And John, I guess the question is, what do you see that a lot of those types of companies, those startups that, you know, maybe started appearing in 2015, 2014, and are, you know, now some of them, like, you know, Convoy, are getting their second and third rounds of funding. You know, I don't know if you even consider them startups anymore, but how are they pushing companies like AGL, pushing the rest of the industry, and what are, you know, doing to catch up?
Stay up, I guess. Companies like ours, and most of our peers in the industry, you know, start out as logistics companies and then applied technology. These, you know, the Flexports of the world, which are great companies, you know, really, I call them disruptive because they're kind of coming the reverse way. They're starting with technology and then trying to apply logistics to it. So they're learning logistics while we're learning technology. It's an interesting mix, and I like it because it constantly pushes the envelope in terms of what is expected from companies like ours.
Right.
And I like that. I mean, competition is the best thing you could ever have. Absolutely. And I love the kind of disruptive technology or disruptive systems that come into the play because it really forces you to play differently.
Well, how do you, you know, all these different systems, new ideas, new technologies, integration's got to be a concern. How can you ensure that they integrate with the core platforms? You know, how is AGL tackling integration?
Yeah, that's a challenge for customers because there's a couple things. First, you know, with all this technology comes confusion. It's natural. You know, what
Guilty
do I do?
As charged.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tremendous amount of choices emerging in the marketplace. And so, you know, a study like this supply chain technology investment report that we put in out, you know, the intent there is to really provide the big picture. And we counsel our customers really to look at the entire supply chain, the big picture first, and then determine where the holes are, what are the weaknesses in your supply chain, and then let's map to that. Let's figure out what we can do to solve that problem. So when we started out in this technology world, we started out with a very agile platform, and we built everything to suit, or we call purpose-built, for each of our customers. There's not any two supply chains alike, and there's no two AGL platforms alike. We build it uniquely for each application. And so we encourage our customers to do what we do routinely, and that is go ahead and look at the entire supply chain. Take the time to map end-to-end what your workflow looks like. And if you take that time to really analyze it, you're going to find all those gaps and all the handoff points, all those inefficiencies, all those cost-sucking, you know, places for error, and you're going to focus on those. And that is really the great opportunity we have, is to optimize the supply chain by looking at those handoff points. And that's really what mapping is all about. And if you have a platform, and there's a few out there that are adaptable to somebody's workflow, it makes it so much easier, because any of you that have lived through, you know, a ERP or enterprise resource planning system, you know, introduction, you know that you've got to adapt all of your workflows within the company to a platform. We hate that. We want the reverse to occur. We want the technology to adapt to the
our
workflow.
Real value streams.
That's exactly right.
So a couple last questions here as we wrap up this first segment. You mentioned the big picture. What is one concern, challenge, in issue, item, you name it, that maybe isn't getting enough attention when we think about the big picture of where supply chain is headed?
You know, the thing that the thing that gets too much attention is these advanced buzz term technologies. I mean, they're going to come and they're going to be important and they're going to contribute, but I think what's overlooked is the block and tackling kinds of issues. You know, I alluded to it a moment ago with the idea of really mapping your workflow. That's a very important, very, very time-consuming step on the front end. But the more you spend on planning, anybody in business knows this, the more time you spend on planning, the faster and more effective the execution is. And so I think that what people need to really sit back and look at very carefully is understanding their big picture. What do they really need to solve for? You know, buying one piece of it is like putting a new carburetor on your engine in your car. It may cause lots of other things to go awry.
Exactly. So what's downstream?
You really don't want to do it piecemeal. You really want to look at it as an integrated system.
I like the end-to-end mapping. That's we've spent time with organizations and
TPM.
Yeah, TPM and value stream mapping, and really bringing things to the surface that a lot of assumptions are made, especially between the functional areas of a company, and grabbing that cross-functional team, spending time in that proverbial whiteboard setting where you're mapping out the whole thing. It's amazing what comes to the surface and how many assumptions get dispelled that just are never, you know, never accurate to begin with.
And I'll mention one other thing, if I may.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to watch over the last 3-4 years the elevation of the logistics executive in an organization.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be that they were buried down somewhere under a CFO or whatever.
Go talk to the shipping department.
Yeah, exactly. They are now senior officers strategically positioned in the company, and that's a sign
as
of the times.
Is
as it should be. And it's very exciting for us to see that happen.
Amen. I'm with you. And you're going to find a very friendly audience with that thought in this room. So one final question. So, of course, to find out more about AGL, AmericanGlobalLogistics.com, is that also where we can find the report?
You bet.
Okay, great. And one more quick shout-out. John mentioned, but I spoke with Kathy Robertson this morning with Logistics Trends and Insights. Seems like an incredible resource there, and some really neat collaboration going on.
Future guest, I think. She'd
future
be great.
Guest.
Yeah,
love
she'd
it.
She'd be great.
Great. Well, again, I want to thank John Slingerup, Chairman and CEO of American Global Logistics, for stopping by from his busy schedule and joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you.
All right. We are going to move to our next guest on Supply Chain Now Radio. We welcome Bill Huber, CFO at Velux Group USA, good friend, longtime friend, mentor. I met Bill years ago at a ACG function. Can't remember the venue, but we've stayed in touch. And I tell you, Bill is doing some big things, and it's great to have him for the first time on the podcast, as I've learned a lot from him in the 12 years and 3 kids since.
Exactly.
So first off, Bill, let's talk about Velux. Tell us, if you could, for those that may not be aware, tell us about the company, the products, and the story.
Happy to. And again, thanks for having me, Scott. Velux is the global leader in skylights and roof window systems. We were founded in 1941 by Willem Kahn Rasmussen, a brilliant Danish engineer who saw a need, clearly during the Second World War, to find and create space for living in attics. And to make those attics livable, he created a roof window, cutting a hole in a roof and glazing over it. And that has now evolved into, as I say, we are the global leader. We operate out of 40 sales companies in 40 countries, 11 manufacturing facilities. We have been here in the U.S. since 1975, and out of our U.S. production facilities in Greenwood, South Carolina, we literally supply about half of the world. We operate in A to Z, literally bringing in raw and manufacturing, milling our own wood and forming our own metal and making our own panes.
Wow.
And critical, obviously, in the supply chain that we have very, very long-term relationships with great suppliers, but ultimately a brilliant, innovative workforce. And we take that product to the markets in North America, South America, Asia Pacific. And it's a complete, wonderful, growing business. We've
a lot of growth.
We've been very fortunate, even in the housing downturn, not to experience the same degree of volatility as a lot of other businesses, because we are a niche player.
Green technology alive and well. Let's talk about, it may not be a global advantage, but here in the States, federal tax incentives for a lot of your products. So speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, coincidentally, the solar tax credit was what incentivized us to also be very proactive in the market and develop products that operate off of solar energy. And with our window platforms, you literally have a solar register on the window, or you can open it through, no electricity. It took all of the wiring out of the decking of the roof. And so it's been a very, very successful product. And we have solar-powered blinds that go in the windows. We have solar-powered night lights in our sun tunnel or tubular daylight product. And, we continue to lobby to keep those really beneficial advantages going in the U.S. And, it's all about research and development as well. And so we – go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's like we had a connection. You were talking in the warm-up downstairs and before we get into some other things about R&D tax credits here in the U.S. You know, with a true global business like VLUX, you've got a pretty interesting perspective on it.
Yeah.
Other countries treat the R&D tax credit or similar industry benefits very differently. Speak to that.
Well, it's interesting that the U.S. is there was a report that just came out in industry news today, and it was about the U.S. being 25th on the research and development initiative supported by, frankly, federal funding or other incentives like tax credits. And so we obviously have a very heavy focus on innovation at VLUX, and we have our own independent U.S. Design and development group and a European one, obviously. We have slightly different platforms in our products just because of the nature of our homes. Mm. And we spend a lot of time working with R&D consultants to make sure that every element within our, be it, manufacturing or what our workforce is working on, is captured to the benefit of our tax credits every year.
And we got to fix that. We're in the top 25. We got to get them into the R&D playoff, right? At least top four.
Absolutely.
So hopefully the White House will be listening to us, right? Will, I think you have a direct line, right?
Of course, yeah.
All right, so switching gears here. So let's talk about the modern role of finance and organizations, especially with regard to supply chain. Talk to us a little about that.
Sure. It's interesting because when you had invited me, I thought about it, and it's not just supply chain in the, form of getting our product in the most efficient way to a satisfied customer, but it's about communications throughout the organization. And in VLUX, and this is what I really enjoy about my role, is finance is seen as thought leaders in our business, and so we collaborate very closely with all disciplines, but we have a seat at the table from the most senior levels, the CEO and our group CFO in Denmark, Peter Bang, brilliant guy. And we literally go through all of our strategic planning and immediately think, okay, how can we be thought leaders in rolling out elements of every initiative to, once again, go from ideation all the way to having satisfied customers, whether those are internal business partners, our line of business executives, or you know, literally folks on the shop floor, or those who are working in logistics.
So let's talk about this, the boxing, the sparring that you alluded to earlier. Tell us about what goes on internally.
Well, it seems to be a culture in maybe the Danish culture, John, maybe you know from your heritage. But we talk about it as sparring, which is just making sure that we're always challenging our best thinking. And, you know, it's interesting. If I think about the role that we've created in finance over the past 5 years, we have support functions. We are servant leaders, if you will, in finance. But we, in an organization like Velux, support manufacturing. We support logistics. We support sales and marketing. We support design and development. But at the end of the day, every one of those has to be working really closely together to bring value through. As I said earlier, you know, we may have new ideas. Interestingly enough, again, just under our new CEO, David Briggs, who started January 1st, 27-plus year veteran of the company, but the first non-Dane and actually only the second non-family member in the CEO seat. But he created this idea called the Velux Innovation Challenge. And he literally challenged every single employee to think about ideas that were going to help continue achieving relevance, share, or profitability in our business. And so I will say it's one of these eye-opening experiences where we're now thinking not just about daylight and fresh air through the roof, which is our slogan. We are daylight engineers. That is also our motto. But the ideas that came out are fabulous. And so there were over 2,300 ideas from employees, and we're only a 10,000 employee business. But still, 2,300 plus ideas. We narrowed it down to 25, or the Velux Management Group in Denmark narrowed it down to 25. And just today, in David's CEO State of the Ops, he narrowed it down to 6.
Okay.
And two of those are, we're proud to say, U.S. ideas.
Awesome.
And
that's great.
We've got one from China, one from Denmark, one from Russia. And so, you know, it's very interesting. These ideas will go forward into true product development.
The Daylight Engineers, internal
that is us.
Slogan there. I liked what you said, always challenging our best thinking. You know, we've certainly, if we've talked about UPS, all that, that constructively dissatisfied, I think is a phrase that UPSers put it. But, you know, I think we can, when we arrive and we think we've got, you know, we've achieved success and just that, you know, sitting on our laurels, it's like a human thing. And so constantly challenging, you know, what y'all think is the best and the best thinking. That's a really neat thing there.
I would say that right now we don't have any time to sit on our laurels.
Right.
And again, I don't know if I'm jumping forward, but one of the things that David's brought in the new strategic mission for Velux, our five-year plan, is growth through acquisition in the commercial area. So we've been, you know, masters of our own universe, or very, very dominant players in the residential skylight and roof window business. And now we're really focusing on that very significant opportunity in commercial industrial buildings. But it's not just your flat roof warehouse that we want to bring more daylight into. It's commercial structural glass or custom structural glass. And therefore, we've been on a very successful acquisition trail for the past year. We acquired our biggest competitor here in the U.S. with commercial expertise, Wasco Products, Inc., out of Maine. I spend almost half of my time there now, as do many of my colleagues.
Great lobster and blueberries.
Oh, man, that was my dinner last night, lobster roll, you know. But we've also acquired a significant competitor in Germany, Jet Manufacturing, that is still going through the European Union approvals, but also bought back a company that started through VKR, or our Velux parent company, many decades ago, and they're also in custom structural. But we just bought them back a few weeks ago.
Okay. Acquisitive growth. I learned a new word from you earlier as in our prep notes, acquisitive. It took me 3 weeks to practice that where I could say it. So let's talk about all the growth and all the acquisitive growth, some of the challenges associated with integrating acquisitions. Let's talk about what are, if you had to think of the top couple, one, two, or at least top five, what are some of those that that you would deem as top five worthy, and how are y'all tackling that?
Well, I think anybody who's been through an acquisition knows one of the key hurdles is melding the cultures. But along with that comes the immediate opportunities, and clearly, as those on the acquisition team know, you're always going to put forward a proposal to acquire a company because here are the synergies that we can promise and deliver in a very short time frame. And so those areas of opportunity are especially the combination or harmonization of supply chain areas, suppliers, harmonizing our own logistics, harmonizing product platforms, product materials, harmonizing personnel, or even best practices from one shop floor that's been through the entire value stream mapping to another that may benefit from that. So we'll immediately deploy resources to ensure that we're able to capture and quickly, and that is literally my job, report that we are delivering on those synergies promised.
So, and you're talking about, evaluating product materials, workforce, production strategies, the footprint itself, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I am not envious of your role and of your team's role, but
but you should be. We got great people.
But it's exciting.
It is.
The growth that you're your team is leading. So talking of looking forward to 2019, what can you share that if we're keeping our finger on the pulse of Velux?
Oh yeah. Well, again, 2019, we have so much on the plate. The very first thing is we are revitalizing our financial reporting. So we're moving to what we call the Velux Performance Model 2.0. And it's, again, one of the ways that we, together with all of the disciplines in the business, assure continuity and comparability across the globe. So we are literally on one reporting platform for all sales companies. They're all independent general managers or group presidents. But we take that information and we can, we obviously have an executive dashboard. I think most developed companies do nowadays. But we're taking it into a way that gets away from just the old school product, customer, channel profitability to literally looking, how do we go to business and measuring our success there.
There's not much time for old school thinking in today's supply chain. I mean, some of the thing, John, I like how you talked about how we can't overlook the blocking and tackling that has to go on in supply chain. But other than some of those traditional core values, I mean, everything's changing, and you've got to constantly
absolutely
challenge our best thinking.
So we
I'm gonna steal that T-shirt ism from you, Bill.
Sorry. And,
It's copyrighted.
Okay. Daylight. I should have known the engineers would have copyrighted that. Okay, good stuff. To learn more about Velux, check out VeluxUSA.com, right,
for the
U.S.-based business.
Yep.
And want to thank our good friend Bill Huber, CFO at Velux Group USA, for joining us amongst his world travels. So happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you again, Scott.
All right. Our final guest today here, our cleanup hitter on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Yovani Jerez, the national president of Hacimos, which is a leading Latino employee resource group at AT&T. The ERG first launched in 1998 in San Antonio, Texas, and Hacimos currently has more than 11,000 employee members in the U.S. Is that I get any of that wrong, Yovani?
No, 11,000 members, thank God, in 42 chapters. It's a lot of moving parts, actually.
What an incredible organization. So glad to have you with us, making time out for us. I would like to start, tell us more about Hacimos, and in particular, what led you to choosing to become a leader with the organization?
Sure. I think to provide a little context, so what happens in a lot of these big corporations, Fortune 500 companies, diversity and inclusion is a huge initiative, not only because it is the right thing to do, but also because it makes business sense. And actually, the two prior, you know, both John and Bill have been talking about the power of diversity in different language. But, you know, behind that, it's exactly that. It's a concept that when you have diversity of thought, diversity of background, it adds to innovation. It adds to thinking differently, taking the new and bringing it into merging new concepts with old concepts. Mm-hmm. So it makes diversity and inclusion makes a lot of business sense. So for Fortune 500 companies, this has become a pillar of their mission. And so within AT&T, for example, we have 12 different groups, affinity groups, mm-hmm. AT&T veterans, women of AT&T, LGBT. And then the one that I lead is the Hispanic one, was Hacemos. The word actually means we do.
We do. Okay.
Yeah, we make it happen. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, we're about action, which is one of the things that I'm very proud of, because it's, you know, it's one thing to certainly to talk about doing something. It's another thing to actually execute against it and make it happen. So
can I ask you a question there? So we talk about lip service leadership on this show almost every episode. And I admire what you just said right there, because it's all about action. You know, you can have the best laid plans, you can talk about it, you can have the best meetings, but until the rubber hits the road and action is taken and progress is made, what have you done? What's the dangers of lip service leadership within an organization, do you think?
Well, my grandfather has said it best to me, and he said it in Spanish, which is, you know, saber es bueno, hacer es Dios. Mm. Which translates roughly to know is good, to do is God. Mm. So ultimately, you know, God is a creator, so you have to create. The closest way you get to divinity, in a sense, is by creating. And, you know, in the business context, that's creating value. You know, so no matter what it is that you're doing, you got to go ahead there and create value.
Takes action.
And I think that's actually one of the biggest misconceptions that I often stumble upon in leadership, is that people want to step into a leadership role thinking that gives them a license to do less. Mm. When in reality,
we got a lot of chuckles around the room here.
Yeah. When in reality, it's actually a responsibility to do more. And that was actually, you know, kind of like my campaign message as I was running for to be the national president. Mm. Of this, you know, of 11,000, you know, employees, I was promising them to do more. And it was interesting, as I was running against my two older candidates, you know, their offering was almost like to keep the status quo. Mm. And what I was saying is like, yeah, we have a great legacy. Change we got to do more. We got to build upon that. And, you know, and I think probably one of the most dangerous things that you could do as a leader, model that vision, you know, or create too many bullet points, create too many to-dos. And both John and actually Bill did a really good job at highlighting one of the most important parts of leadership, which is to create clarity. You know, John, for example, was talking about the supply chain, creating clarity around the supply chain, right? When you do the handoffs, you know, from one side to the other, and how crucial that is to not only understanding the business, but then understanding the opportunities where you could capitalize and turn around that understanding into monetizing and adding to the bottom line. And then, you know, Bill kept using this interesting word, harmonizing. Mm. All right, you could only harmonize against with suppliers, with your vendors, with your partners in the NMA, or if you have clarity as to what it is that you're going to be doing. Right, what are those low hanging fruits that you could have? You know, tap into them and then move in a certain direction. That's one of the pillars and centers of being a great servant leader or any sort of leader.
We harmonize to monetize.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Ka-ching.
That lesson is so applicable also to your not only to your professional realm but also to your personal realm.
Right.
You know, having clarity as to, you know, because if you as a leader have that clarity and you're able to articulate that succinctly, right? Again, not 20 bullet points.
That's right.
Succinctly.
I'm mad about my 20 bullet points.
Yeah. To your to your followers, to your team, then everybody knows what to do. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows how to move forward. Everybody knows how to contribute value. And that's always been a lesson that I learned very early on in my career, and a lesson that I have applied both personally and professionally. Create clarity. Be succinct about what you got to do. You know, one or two things. You know, Simon Sinek, right? He did a great job that sort of addresses this concept of clarity, but he tackles it from a different perspective. He talks about defining the why, mm-hmm. right? Like most companies,
rings, right?
Yeah, both companies knows the how and you know, and the what and the when, but the best companies out there know the why. And he tied the concept of why, in fact, to something very relevant to here in Atlanta. Mm. You know, the best example that he gave was from Martin Luther King here, you know, whose home is here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said when MLK gave his most famous speech, he didn't outline a plan of 20 bullet points of how do we get from where we are today to where we get to the future, right? No, what he talked about was the dream. He talked about the why. He didn't talk about the business plan. He talked about the why, and it's exactly that sense of clarity that could really ignite, activate, refresh, innovation, employee engagement, diversity of thought. Mm. So you know, so I'm very very happy that both John here and Bill demonstrated that as they were articulating their respective businesses.
So, Yvonne, let me ask you a question. I think my next question was, you know, tell me why you were you saw value in jumping in and leading a group like a Seamless. But that comes through loud and clear for what you shared the last 4 or 5 minutes. What is, you know, looking forward? And you were elected when a few months back.
It's a 2 year term commitment, okay. And it started back in July. Okay. July 2018. So
if you could share, and it might be a little bit of a curveball, but what stamp do you want to put on the organization through your leadership?
So very similar to what both John and Bill actually talked about. So probably the lowest hanging fruit that we currently have is our website and making that website mobile friendly. Mm. All right. What does it do when it creates mobile friendly? Well, now I could walk up to any of our 11,000 members, check on the status, upgrade them, collect dues, collect donations, all from the convenience of my smartphone. Mm. You know, we've been at this for 30 years. We are a technology company. You would have thought that my predecessors would have, you know, acted upon this low hanging fruit.
Right.
And I've actually been advocating it for a while, but. You know, sometimes, you know, like I said, you're the one who needs to step up and do more.
Right. Well, so improving the communication, certainly through digital engagement is a big one, it seems.
And visibility. Visibility is certainly improving. You know, when you improve visibility, it adds clarity. Mm. Now, you know, we put into four pillars basically the essence of how we champion what it is that we do. And then, you know, when you tie those up together and you meet your customer, right? In a sense, my customers are our members. You know, our members don't want to wait to go back to their computer to log in and go to a website and do 20 clicks to get what it is they want to do. We got to meet our members where they are today, and that's, you know, they're spending a whole lot of time on their smartphones, and we know that statistically, right? I mean, just in general, overall. So that we want to capitalize on that because we think that's going to impact everything else. And not only that, I mean, internally, when talking externally as a part of that is we have such a powerful story as an organization. You know, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. By the way, everybody who volunteers in all these ERGs, employee resource groups, mm. nobody gets paid. Mm. Everybody's volunteer. Yep. So there's a lot of philanthropy and there's a lot of heart and passion behind the volunteers that step up to the plate to do this. But when you where I was leading to is that, you know, when you create visibility of, you know, also external visibility mm-hmm. to the projects and the impact that we're doing on championing STEM, for example, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics,
yep.
The scholarships. I mean, we've given over $3 million scholarships.
Wow.
In the past 20 years. And then also professional development.
Yep.
And volunteering. Those are our four pillars.
Yep. So let me ask you, going back on the STEM. So I think I got this from the CMOS website. According to a 2015 report by Alencia in Education, and I probably butchered that, I apologize, the number of Latinos in STEM has increased over the years, but Latinos still make up a very small percentage of the STEM workforce. We got to fix that. And yeah, we can apply that kind of to what we're doing with Supply Chain 101, right? We've got a gender gap task force which touches on different aspects of diversity. But what's the it's such a huge opportunity as well, right?
Correct. And we recognize the I don't want to call it a problem. I want to call it the challenge. Mm. We recognize the challenge. So and actually, from a as a personal note, that was one of my motivators for getting a Master's of Science in Technology. Mm. You know, my undergrad was Bachelor's of Arts, and you know, great school, Dartmouth College was, you know, a fantastic school. But then I wanted to, you know, as I was part of AT&T and saw those gaps, I was like, you know what? How do I go deeper into the technology field? And that's why I decided to pursue a Master's of Science in Technology, in very much ways to set an example that this is where this is the frontier, this is the renaissance, mm, at least for the Latino Hispanic community. You know, too often, as I talk to college and high school students, right, when I go talk to them in career days or, you know, during Hispanic Heritage, mm-hmm, Month, and I ask them, so where do you want to do? What do you want to take it? You know, I see the same answers, which is, you know, I want to be a teacher. I want to be a social worker. I want to, you know, I always see the trend of them wanting to have an impact that involves people, mm, right? I mean, it's that's where I see the trend. But I'm always left scratching my head as to, like, gosh, who are the people who want to come out of here and saying, I want to be the next Bill Gates. I want to, you know, I want to build the next application that connects people all around the world. Mm. And we do need more of that. And I think it really starts from awareness, right? You know, tying it back to that first word that I used, clarity.
Yep. Yes.
We got to start with the clarity of why there's an impetus for embracing STEM, mm-hmm, embracing technology. And actually, you know, the Hispanic population compared to the general population is the fastest adopter of technology. Mm. You know, we look at this actually within the smartphone world. We see by far Hispanics outperform almost by 250%. They use more, they spend more time browsing on their phones, more time texting, more time downloading apps. So they have the more variety of apps and using varieties of apps. Mm. It's almost like they skipped a laptop. They skipped a laptop. They skipped a computer because the entry point of those two, you know, at least $1,000, right? I mean, although you could probably get something for $600 now.
Sure.
But the smartphone, think about it, right? It's like your mini laptop. You could accomplish all of that there. So they'd rather spend $1,000 on the smartphone, with knowing that they could accomplish all that. They'd much rather, you know, spend upfront more money on their smartphone, and they could accomplish everything, and they'll skip the laptop altogether.
Yep, leap right over it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
So let's switch gears kind of as we I'd love to talk. You know, leadership always comes up in these series, and you know, you could dedicate a week to the topic and just scratch the surface. But let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about the real tangible value of diversity. How do you mentioned earlier that it's not diversity inclusion, not just the right thing to do, but it's a huge opportunity. How do we, and in the C-suite, it is, as Bill mentioned a little while ago, ka-ching, it is about the value it's brought to the table and the bottom line. Speak to that. How do you quantify the power of diversity?
Yeah, probably the first report that I could think about who does a really good job at quantifying the business value of diversity and inclusion comes from McKinsey. Mm. and they published this probably about 10 years ago, where they went through great lengths to quantify the actual tangibles to the bottom line when you have a diverse workforce and what you do when you compare that to your peers. And one of the most salient points that was made, you know, is that companies who are more diverse, not only by gender, but also by culture, by different nationalities. I mean, you know, diversity could be a very, very broad term, right? They outperform their peers by 300%. I mean, that's not a small...
That's huge.
That's not a small number at all.
Wish my bank account was 300% bigger. I mean, that's a big figure.
So I think, you know, it's something to pay attention to, not only from, you know, hey, this is the right thing to do, but from a business perspective, it makes very tangible sense.
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned McKinsey, that, and I was looking through some old show notes because they also put out a great survey on a different aspect of diversity when it comes to gender. And they went through a lot of quantification analysis to when women are present in top tiers of leadership, you know, what's the impact that has on bottom line? And it really, again, I don't have that, but I want to say it was like 25%.
Yes, that was during our Kimberly Clark.
Yeah, episode, Kimberly Clark. That's right. Yeah. Whose chief supply chain officer Sandra McQuillan was a guest, mm-hmm. along with a couple of our team members, and. And, you know, it can be very challenging to quantify some of these issues that we know are the right thing to do, but to build a business case, we need some data. But McKinsey puts out some great studies, I think every couple years, on women in leadership return.
I will give you a perfect example.
Yeah, please.
That Atlanta actually based, and you mentioned them earlier, UPS. 5 years ago, UPS did not have a Hispanic website. A website translated to Spanish. Mm. And their ERG group, you know, my counterpart in UPS, they're the ones who push for it. They push for it. So it's like, hey, we'll translate this for you guys. It's one of their fastest segments for small businesses in UPS.
Wow.
Sure.
The simple thing of translating it to Spanish, right? It's not a novel idea. Mm. I mean, knowing that Hispanics are the fastest growing, you know, minority group in the U.S. by 2020, by 2050, they're going to be, you know, about one third of the U.S. population. Mm. It's not a novel idea at all. It's just something that it's just like anything else. You have to have clarity in the fact that diversity does create business value.
Yep.
And then you got to do something with it. I think at the end of the day, diversity is an antidote for echo chambers. It's an antidote for binary thinking, and it's an antidote for ignorance.
Yep.
And I would also dare to say it's an antidote for big mistakes. There are plenty of case studies out there where if they would have had a diverse team, they could have avoided very expensive marketing mistakes, sales strategies.
Mistakes in general.
Yeah, period. Yeah. So,
Again, I wish we had more time, but for the sake of time, Yvonne Jerez, thanks so much for stopping by. National president of Hacimos. We look forward to maybe having you come back, especially as you drive more progress which is a key ERG group within the Fortune 100 community. So thanks so much, Yvonne. Happy Thanksgiving. All right, so we're going to close on this item, and to our audience, we're running a few minutes over, but you know, this is good stuff. Talking leadership is a passion of our guests typically, and that played out again today. All right, so first off, check out our new website, supplychainnowradio.com. We make it that easy.
Big red button to listen live.
That's right, big red button that we try to update very regularly, the easy button. Next up on Supply Chain Now Radio, we're going to be featuring our transportation theme episode on December 3rd with Translogics. ELD came up earlier.
Yep.
They're an ELD technology firm. We've got an NBA All-Star appearing with them who's gotten into the logistics space. Antonio Davis.
Antonio Davis,
formerly with the Indiana Pacers. So he's going to be a guest host along with a couple of the Translogics team members.
But he's not bringing Dale with him?
Not Del Davis. Will, hey, you're getting a star for that one. So Del Davis is a former Clemson Tiger.
Yeah, Clemson Tiger.
Great job there.
Served that up for you.
Eldon Campbell and Del Davis back in the day, they were the Twin Towers. Next webinars. So we do a lot of podcasts, do a lot of webinars. We've got one on December 11th with my business partner, Jessica Clayton, talking about the 2018 supply chain talent market observations, which is going to be helpful. I promise you it's not going to be a talent stream commercial. We all know the war for talent, so this will give you ammunition to hire the best and find the best. And then our own Will Haraway with Backbeat Marketing is going to be our guest on, Will, I should know this date.
It's the 13th of December, sir.
December 13th, yep. Same week. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about supply chain marketing, how to tell your story and influence the influencers, right?
That's right.
So give us a quick 30-second there.
Well, there's nobody that can tell how good your company is doing and how innovative you are and how your customers. They're your biggest asset, and that's how you're able to show the kind of impact you're making in the marketplace, the kind of impact you can make to other similar customers in either similar industries or other industries. And the way you do that is you get in touch with the people that are that follow these industries and these companies every day, and you make sure that they are aware of these stories, and so that when the topics come up, you're top of mind.
Love it.
For sure.
Free webinar, and you can also register for that at our website, supplychainnowradio.com. Will, thanks for your time, and looking forward to tuning in to that. I'm going to skip over for the sake of time upcoming events. We are going to be here in Atlanta. Apex is going to be meeting with ASQ Atlanta as we host Kia Motors Manufacturing of Georgia, Stuart Countess, who is their chief administrative officer, talking about how their journey to number one in quality. So that'll be a neat event. We mentioned the Supply Chain Awards, the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards on March 12, 2019. Want to give best wishes to our friend Ben Harris and his world travels. We miss him here today. Want to thank our sponsors, Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Talent Stream, of course, a WeBank certified recruiting and staffing firm specializing in helping organizations finding top talent in the engineering, manufacturing, and supply chain space. If you want to learn more about Apex, check us out at apexatlanta.org. More information about Talent Stream, talentstreamstaffing.com. If you want more information on anything you heard about today and you can't find it via Google, send us an email to info@apexatlanta.org, and we'll make sure we hook you up. Will, what did we miss?
Well, you didn't mention our big number of downloads, my friend. We've had over 2.4 downloads since May 2017.
Absolutely.
2.4 million.
2.4 million downloads and our newest numbers. Hey, I would take two as well, Stone. we did. Thank you for mentioning that. It was just we got updated this week from our partners at Business Radio X, and 2.4 million downloads since May of 2017. This is our 30th show, which is neat. And, I mean, it's always great to have guests coming back. So should thank our guests. I think, well, that's probably a great finish. So John and Bill and Yovani, thanks so much for taking time out. What a great show.
Real pleasure.
Appreciate the perspective shared. We hope to have you back. I want to wish you and your families a happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
It's one of our favorite holidays. All food and turkey and no gifts. Will, happy Thanksgiving
you too,
to your family. And I think that's a wrap. Thanks, everybody.